introduce our guest speaker this morning, Mjolnir Susan Hagler. Mjolnir began practicing at Minnesota Zen Center a long time ago. I actually remember when she first came, and I think I was pretty young myself. And she practiced here with us for many years. I ordained her as a priest, and she was a priest in training for here for a while. And then she moved and began working with Dokai Georgeson at Hokyoji as a priest in training. And she completed her training with him. And now she's one of the handful of teachers at Clouds and Water. So I feel like this is sort of, I'm happy that she's come home to share her wisdom with us. So thank you so much for being here, Mjolnir.
Thank you so much, Tim, for inviting me to come. It truly does feel like a homecoming that I began practicing at MZMC in the fall of 1980. And so it's just about 40 years ago this month that I began practicing at MZMC. And Tim might not remember this, but I do. When I walked into MZMC 40 years ago on a Thursday evening for Zazen instruction, Tim was the one giving Zazen instruction that evening. So we've known each other from the get-go for me of my Zen practice journey. And I can't believe it's 40 years ago. Oh my goodness. So, and then as Tim mentioned, in 2003 in October, which is 17 years ago, I was ordained by Tim with four other women. And we practiced together for a good long time, for 7 years, and it was quite the event. But there's five women being ordained, and it was such a big event that we made the front page of the Variety section of the Star Tribune that month. So it was quite the deal. So, yes, so those are precious memories for me. And to prepare for this talk, I actually was listening to the last talk that I gave as officially being part of MZMC in January of 2003. And at the time I was speaking about taking stock because it was January, but then I was also using Norman Fisher's book, Sailing Home, which was his Zen interpretation of Homer's Odyssey. And so Odysseus went and he fought in Troy for 10 years, and then he was heading home. And on his way home, he had an interaction with the Cyclops. And he made fun of Cyclops, and Cyclops put a curse on him because Poseidon was Cyclops' father, and he was the god of the sea. And so the curse was that it would take him a very long time to get home, and it wouldn't be easy. And so I was embarking on that journey 10 years ago, and here I am. I'm getting home to my root place of practice, what I like to think of as my family, my Zen family of origin. And I'm just tickled pink to be here. And my heart was pierced that Tim invited me to come speak today. So thank you, Tim. I would like to dedicate this talk to all of my teachers, my formal and informal ones who have crossed my path. And I guess essentially that's really everybody I know. That my father, my biological father, said to me often that wherever you go and whatever you do, there's something to learn. And I've kind of extended that to whoever you meet in your life and whosoever path you cross has something to teach you. And so in that way, I am dedicating this to everybody I know, whether I've met you in person or not. I think that there's something to learn from everybody. I would like to particularly mention Katagiri Roshi, Tim, Dokai, and Tomoy in my dedication. We all began together at MZMC in the 70s and 80s. Minnesota Zen Center was the only place in town to go for Zen practice. And now there's so many places to go. And it began with seeds that were spread before Katagiri Roshi even came, because he was invited by a group of people who had been practicing. And I know that Tim was very instrumental at the very beginning of Minnesota Zen Center. And so I wanted to begin with a story from each of these people that have helped and inspired me in my life and in my practice, which I think are synonymous, that I don't think life and practice are different. So I'll start with Katagiri Roshi. In about maybe 1982 or 1983, I was part of the Tenzo team. And at that time, the Katagiris lived on the second and third floor of the Zen Center, and they would leave the house going down the back stairway from that goes into the kitchen and then go out the back door. And so Roshi was coming down the stairs and I was in the kitchen and I think I was finishing up sweeping, you know, after some event that happened. And I really wasn't too thrilled to be there. I just really wanted to get out of there. And he came down and kind of observed my grumbling and he looked at me with a smile on his face and a twinkle in his eye, and he said, "I feel sorry for you." And I've lived with that story for 38 years or however long, and it's taken on different meanings for me. And these days, the meaning of "I feel sorry for you" is about being in the middle of doing something and not being present. And "I feel sorry for you" means, why can't you just be here right now with sweeping the floor? And I will tell you, ever since that time, whenever I'm sweeping the floor, I always think of that moment and I always thoroughly enjoy sweeping the floors. And then I wanted to, Tomoy-san was my sewing teacher for the initial ordination. And we would meet in her basement at her house. And there was three or four of us who would be sewing together. And sewing in Okesa is a big involved thing and it takes months And there's many, many stitches that you put in an Okesa, and oftentimes we have help. But I was coming to the end of sewing my Okesa, and I was approaching sewing the very last stitch. And I said to Tomoe-san, is there something special I should say or for sewing the last stitch in my Okesa? And she stopped what she was doing and she looked at me and she said, the last stitch is the same as the first. So each stitch, each moment is really important and not to be overlooked. Tim, I don't know when it was, maybe, he sent me an email like in 2007 or 2008, and unfortunately I couldn't find that email. I had saved the words on a computer that I haven't used for years and I couldn't quite access it. So I'm going to paraphrase this email. And I think at the time I was feeling like I felt on the outside of things and I felt like I didn't have a seat at the table. And Tim sent me this email that said something like, there's no seat at the table for me, or for you, or for Buddha, because there is no table. And I was like, whoa. And then he said something like, take good care. See you tomorrow, Tim. And that's one of the most important interchanges I feel like I had with Tim in my training with him for 7 years, because really we're all looking for a place at the table to sit and enjoy and be a part of something, except there's no fixed place. There's no table that we could just sit at and be there. And to me, it's about being able to sit down at a table or a place or no place with whoever is there at the time and whatever comes up. And so not sitting at a particular table, you know, it's like Vimalakirti said, do you come here to sit down or to hear the Dharma? And I think we just need to be open to not looking for a chair to sit down on, but just to be open to what arises. And then with Dokai, that there was an interchange we had that he said something like, intimacy is not personal. That Dokai is another person I've known for 40 years. And so we were good friends before he became my teacher, as Tim was a good friend before he became my teacher. And you know, I think sometimes knowing somebody for such a long time, in some way it could be seen as a blessing and maybe at times not so much. And because there could be baggage there in our relationships. But when Dokai said that to me, something just clicked that our closeness and our intimacy has nothing to do with a long-standing relationship. an intimacy is about meeting the moment together without any obstructions and just taking care of what needs to be done at the moment. And so when I went through my transmission ceremony, when I went through the transmission ceremony with Dokai, that, you know, it's something that I was looking forward to for many years, and it seemed to be a culmination of something, although that's really not an accurate description. But we went through and did this beautiful ceremony, and the next morning we woke up and just needed to take care of cleaning up. And so there were dishes to be done. There were curtains to take off of the ceiling there and fold up and put back in the box and just deconstruct the ceremony and just take care of what needed to be done in terms of getting things ready at Hokyoji for the next thing that might be happening. And so to me, that the next day after the transmission ceremony was just as big a part of the transmission as the formal ceremony itself. And I think that's very important to remember. I know when I was first ordained, it was something I was looking forward to for many years, that I had asked Katagiri Roshi when I was about 24 or 25 years old if he would ordain me, and he said, the fruit's not quite ripe. And that was when in about 1984 or 85. And so then when he said that, I went off. I think he was giving me permission or pointing the way to go out and live your life. Go out and see what life is about. And come back after that. And so I got married. I had 3 children. I, you know, was living my everyday, more worldly life. And 20 years later, the time was right. I guess the fruit had gotten ripe, and Tim ordained me. So it was on my back burner for 20 years, but never far away. And so that, just never know. I'd like to focus on everyday practice now. So Dogen says, practice realization is naturally undefiled. Going forward is, after all, an everyday affair. That's like one of my favorite lines from the Fukanzen Zengi, and generally a favorite teaching of mine, because our practice needs to be rooted in our everyday daily lives. That Zazen goes beyond sitting down on a round cushion, gazing downward, while oftentimes facing a wall. Dogen says, the Zazen I speak of is not meditation practice. It is simply the Dharma gate of joyful ease. The practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment. It is the koan realized. Traps and snares can never reach it. If you grasp the point, you are like a dragon gaining the water, like a tiger taking to the mountains. For you must know that the true Dharma appears of itself, so that from the start, dullness and distraction are set aside. When Zazen mind abides in our everyday lives, the true Dharma can appear of itself, truly. when we're engaged in our life as it is, all the so-called mundane activities of our daily lives, those activities are, so to speak, our frontline workers, that you need to pay attention to them. They are where the Dharma will appear. I'd like to explore another aspect of our everyday lives. You know, in the mythological story of the historical Buddha of Siddhartha, there's a point where there's a story about him going beyond the palace walls and encountering other humans who were sick, old, and dead. He was told that he too was subject to all these conditions in his life. I'd also actually like to add birth to that story, because birth is another common thing we all experience, even if we don't quite remember it. So that although each of these conditions is an aspect of the lives of all beings, for the most part, we as particular individuals view them, each of those aspects, as extraordinary. So for most of us, when we come to these common conditions of our lives, besides the birth part, that we kind of view them with trepidation. We don't want to be sick or dead. But as Katagiri Roshi would say, that attitude is ridiculous. I wanted to read my Shuso case and commentary that was from the Book of Serenity. And the commentary was by Wang Song Shi Xu, and these koans were compiled by Hong Zhi in the 11th to 12th centuries. And at the time, I think Dokai assigned me this case, because I had done some chaplaincy training at a hospital in La Crosse, and so I was seeing many sick, ill, and also dead people. So here's how the case goes. It's case 94 of the Book of Serenity. Dangshan is unwell. When Dangshan was unwell, he was actually on his deathbed, a monk asked, "You are ill, teacher, but is there anyone who does not get ill?" And Dangshan said, "There is." The monk said, "Does the one who is not ill look after you?" And Dangshan said, "I have the opportunity to look after him." The monk said, "How is it when you look after him?" Dangshan said, "Then I don't see that he has any illness." And I would like to read the commentary. And it says, when the ancients were about to go, they frolicked in the realm of old age, sickness, and death among them. Dangshan is unusual. Once he manifested a slight illness, everyone came to look in on him. One monk asked, "You are ill, teacher, but is there anyone who does not get ill?" This monk had an echo in his words. He was presenting his capability in his statement, and he also wanted to see if the sick man had eyes. Dangshan said, "There is. Scratch the itch and the sickness fully remits. It goes away." The monk said, "Does the one who is not ill look after you?" "He carries out He, meaning Dongshan, carries out this order in reverse, wanting to people to know it isn't so. Dongshan said, I have the opportunity to look after him. If you figure it by conventional feelings, the one who isn't sick should look after the one who's sick. Dongshan says, on the other hand, I have the opportunity to watch over him. Is this the principle of inquiring after someone's health in the human sense? This monk wanted to see all the way through. He asked further, how is it when you watch over him? Here it's necessary that you should always serve and honor at all times, going to sleep late at night and getting up early to ask how they are. Only then is it known that you are someone who knows to be grateful and obeys filiality. Dongshan said, when I watch over him, I do not see that he has any illness. This is where everyday practice empowers you when you're dying. And of course, I can spend a whole Dharma talk talking about this, but basically what I would like to say about this is just what was said here. This is where everyday practice empowers you when you're dying. That until we take our last breath, we're alive, and it's part of our everyday life. And it's part of our common human and sentient being experience. And so when we are ill with a sickness, we have the opportunity to try to push it away and not embrace the fact that we're sick. Or we have the ability to just stand up in the middle of whatever our maladies or difficulties are. And so, and when we can embrace those things, that's just part of our everyday life. And that's really important. And so I think a big question and point of practice is, how can we embrace the inevitable conditions of the lives of all sentient beings with curiosity and not aversion? Although we're all subject to these conditions, they'll manifest in a variety of ways. Some will have chronic illnesses, sicknesses like cancer or Lyme's disease. Others might have a heart attack or be hit by a truck. For the most part, we just don't know what the particulars of our illnesses and deaths will be about. And that's where there's some particularity for each of us. But I think the important thing in our practice is, how can we change the perceptions of these things that are just part of our everydayness, of sickness and old age and death? And in some way, they're extraordinary, and in a more universal way, they're extraordinarily ordinary. That until we become ill or needing to face our own deaths or have a person that we're close or intimate to in the midst of those conditions, that we just have had blinders on so that we don't see what our own mortality is about. And once we have that experience, something just changes. I think our whole attitude for many of us, particularly those of us who are practicing, who care about embracing all of our different experiences, that the opportunity to change and to pivot and to appreciate our lives and our sickness, old age, and death in a different way and relate to these conditions with appreciation, that something completely changes. I wanted to mention, so I don't know if people here know Joanne, who's one of the teachers at Compassionate Ocean Zen Center, but a number of years ago, she went to practice in France with a group of nuns. And at that time, there was a nun who was dying. And many people went to this nun who was dying, and many people said, please, just let go. Let go. You know, and we're trying to encourage her to just let go of this life. But then I think perhaps it was the head nun, the mother superior, I guess you would say, went in and said, let it in. And the experience of letting the condition of dying in was very essential in being able to let go of life. That you can't let go of something you haven't let into your life. And that I'm sure I heard Joanne speak about this 25, 30 years ago, and it's another wonderful teaching that I've kept with me. That about 5 years ago, I too had an illness experience, and I was so happy that I had this Shuso case that Dokai had given me about illness to be my companion during that time. I had a bout with cancer, and thankfully my cancer diagnosis was not terminal at that time. So I had the opportunity to, instead of viewing it as my particular illness, to just approach this cancer and the chemo as this is what illness is. That it wasn't just about myself. Of course, there's an aspect that was about myself. And so I chose to be very open about it as I was already an aspiring Zen teacher. And so I let people know that this is what illness is for me, and to please accompany me on this journey if you so choose. And so when I was going through chemo, I was scared, and I didn't know what it was going to be about, and I didn't know if I was even going to be able to get up the stairs of my house, and my husband was still working, and so another friend of mine set up this sign-up genius or something or other like that for people to help me, like, and people were coming that first chemo every 2 hours to come just be with me, because I just didn't know what it was going to be like. And very quickly I saw that it wasn't what I had imagined to be. But all these people came out of the woodwork to help and support me. People who I hadn't seen in years, some people who I had some difficult feelings about. But all these people were showing up. And so it was my place to just be upright and to invite whoever came to the door in to help me. And actually, it ended up that I didn't need so much physical help, and I ended up serving tea to all these people, and we would be sitting and just catching up. And that actually helped support me so much, and I didn't realize that there was all this support for, seemingly for me, but for anybody with this illness. And at the time I just said, it seems counterintuitive, but this is like the happiest time of my life. And so you can't tell what illness is. I mean, that having an idea that illness was going to be this terrible thing and not being open to letting it be something different was a very big lesson to me. And I hope it helped and supported other people in the process to know that illness does not have to be something you push away. I think that people really like to help each other, and it really empowers everybody involved to be able to take those step forward, as Dogen says, from an everyday affair. Let's see. But I want to say that old age that most of us reach, I know not all of us reach, but old age is like Dogen's wood turning to ash. Firewood becomes ash, and it does not become firewood again. Yet do not suppose that the ash is future and firewood is past. You should understand that firewood abides in the phenomenal expression of firewood, which fully includes past and future, and is independent of past and future. Ash abides in the phenomenal expression of ash, which fully includes future and past. Just as firewood does not become firewood again after it is ash, you do not return to birth and death. We begin our lives as babies, and our life's energy carries us through. We cannot reflect on what it was like when we were in the midst of childhood, adolescence, middle age, and so forth. Or we can reflect on what it was like in the midst of childhood, adolescence, and middle age, and so forth. But those conditions are now ash, and we can't return to them. Although we can be informed by them in our present manifestation. Our practice is not to be turned off or attached to what has been or what will be, to meet each moment with an open heart. So when I gave my very first Dharma talk at MCMC, maybe in about 2004 or 2005, I was wanting to begin the talk singing this little verse from the song. And somebody in my household, I won't say who, but there's not too many people in my household, said, please don't sing. And so at that time, I didn't sing. I recited the verse. But now, 16 years later, I'm going to sing you that verse. You've got to get up every morning with a smile on your face and show the world all the love in your heart. People gonna treat you better. You're gonna find, yes you will, that you're beautiful as you feel. Thank you, Carole King. And thank you all.